Now, a story out of Georgia, which is getting coverage as far away as Britain and South Africa. According to police in Waycross, Georgia, a group of third graders put together a fairly detailed plot to overwhelm and stab their teacher. Yesterday, Waycross police released a photo of the items the kids brought to school with them. Handcuffs, duct tape, a crystal paperweight, and a broken steak knife. At least two children are under arrest. Police say as many as nine may be involved. Their ages range from 8 years old to 10. It's one of those stories that lends itself to easy finger-pointing. TV, video games, permissive parents. Reality is rarely that simple. If you work in schools, if you're a parent of a grade school student, what concerns you about this story? 800-989-8255. Email talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Ted Feinberg is Assistant Executive Vice President of the National Association of School Psychologists, and he joins us now from our bureau in New York. And thanks very much for coming in today.
You're more than welcome.
And before we continue, I have to emphasize that you and I know exactly as much as anybody else who's read about this story on the wires or the newspapers. That's all we know. But given that, doesn't this seem like unusual behavior for kids so young?
Yes, it does. It has a certain exaggerated quality to it, and one does not imagine that third graders would typically put together this type of plot against their teacher. And one of the positives that I have read in this situation is that another pupil in the school who was familiar with these children shared that information with appropriate adults, which we have been trying for years to get across to children and schools across the country, that if children are suspicious or hear of information that might have a tragic outcome, that reporting that information was really in the best interest of the children, the adults, and their siblings in schools. And so whoever that child was that reported the information, that certainly should be acknowledged as an important part of this scenario.
And again, all we know thus far are the police allegations. Nevertheless, you might think, oh, this must be an exaggeration. It must be something that could be explained away. Well, according to the police, different students were given different assignments. One child was to cover the windows. Another was to knock the teacher unconscious with that crystal paperweight. Yet another would stab the teacher. Another was supposed to clean up. This seems like an elaborate scheme, doesn't it?
It seems elaborate, and it also seems that there was much more time for these youngsters to plan this event. And that goes contrary to many of the ways in which we have looked at these cases with older children, that targeted violence usually is much more planned and thought out. It seems hard for me to understand how these very young children would have had the time and the resources to really think through this, except that maybe the information that they were using were information that they had seen or heard about it in other locations.
And nevertheless, does this suggest a lot of students involved, a fairly elaborate plot? Does it suggest to you that there might have been one of these children who might have been a ringleader?
Quite probably that there was one person who was the inspiration for this, probably the youngster who was disciplined for inappropriate behavior in the classroom. The critical issue here is whether the threats would have been implemented or something would have happened to whether some of the perpetrators would have at the last minute backed out. One never knows. But clearly the ways in which this was set up seem so much like what all of us have opportunities to see in the media every evening. And that's a very troubling issue.
A lot of these kids, this class, in fact, was a special ed class, kids with attention deficit disorder, that sort of thing. Does that figure into this, or is that going to figure into the way this is portrayed?
Well, your opening comments about making rush-to-judgment statements, I think, is very, very important. There may be some in your listenership who think, well, of course, these are kids who have difficulties. They have attention deficit disorder. They have hyperactivity. They have a variety of learning-related problems. That in and of itself does not help us conclude that those are the causal factors, that there are lots of kids who manifest these types of learning and attentional problems who do not show any kind of tendency towards violence. And so it's really, I caution against making rash judgments without looking at all of the data that is important to look at. And we do have protocols that help schools look at the threat assessment potential in these types of situations and in other situations where kids are suspected of engaging in plans to hurt adults or other children.
Our guest is Ted Feinberg, the Assistant Executive Director of the National Association of School Psychologists. We're talking about a case out of Waycross, Georgia, where police there identified all kinds of materials that a bunch of third grade students aging in age from 8 to 10 years old brought in as part of an elaborate plot to attack their teacher, handcuffs, duct tape, a crystal paperweight that was supposed to be used to knock her out, and a broken steak knife that was apparently intended to stab her with. And I have to ask you, would children averaging 9 years old, would they understand the consequences of this?
An excellent question. And very often when we do interviews of children who are thought to have potential for these behaviors, in point of fact, they don't fully recognize the realities of their actions. And if we hearken back to the involvement that kids have with media game, with games on the computer, with games of violence, where the object is to hurt or maim or injure the figure on the screen. When the game is over, you press reset, and the characters come back to life. Unfortunately, that is not the way real life functions, and so. There may be some of those youngsters who thought this was an exciting kind of full of intrigue activity to participate in, but when and if that teacher was seriously injured, I think the reality that this was not a video game would have happened for these kids.
Let's get some listeners in on the conversation. Again, our number 800-989-8255. We'll start with Shelley. Shelley calling us from Athens, Ohio.
Hi there.
Hi.
I taught third grade for many years and never had anything quite like this, of course, and I don't know anything about the parents in this situation, so I'm not passing judgment there, but I will say I had several incidences where I had to haul kids kicking, screaming, punching at me to the office. This is a small rural country school, and if I had to call the parents to deal with something such as this, was berated by the parents with the student in the background, yelling in the background. So lack of respect all around. College didn't prepare me for that at all.
Kicking, screaming, rage in a 9-year-old, I can understand. Calculated plotting, that's what I find hard.
That's exactly right. So, like I said, I'm not passing judgment on the parents, but either something in Ohio, or I don't know if this is nationwide, a congresswoman's trying to require, this was just on the radio today, require parents to volunteer in the schools, make it a requirement, get them time off their jobs to help, and I'm all for that.
All right. Shelley, I take it you're not teaching third grade anymore?
I'm not teaching third grade anymore. I started my own business, but I miss it, and I want to return or teach at the college level, and most of it was a joy. It's a wonderful age, but I wish those kids would put as much effort into what was going on in their schoolwork. They must be quite clever.
Thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Parental supervision, is that a factor, do you think, Ted Feinberg?
It's an absolutely critical factor. And certainly when we look at the threat assessment profile that was developed by the FBI and the Secret Service in coordination with the U.S. Department of Education, we want to look at what are the important elements in children's lives that might influence their attitudes about violence. And so if youngsters are coming from families where there is a lack of respect for civil behavior, where there is a routinely occurring violence, domestic violence that they observe, where there is no one monitoring what they are watching on television or via the internet, these are all contributing factors that we want to look at as we make an assessment as to the child's potential not only to make a threat but to act upon those threats. And those can be very, very different sides of the same issue.
Let's go to the calls. This is Felice. Felice with us from San Jose in California.
Hi. Long-time listener. This is the first time I've come in. I'm really enjoying this topic. I am a parent of a third grader. And the thing that I notice is in this age group is they are very intelligent, and they have the foresight to think about these things. But what they don't have is that with this generation, we really protect kids a lot from reality, you know, the harsh things. But then they see on the media, and I don't even mean video games, but just, like, commercials geared towards kids, a lot of really bad behavior. And it's almost as if they see these things and they don't realize that there are very real consequences if you were to act like this in real life.
Yeah, and the character of the plot of assigning different roles to people, again, you hate to point fingers at TV, but doesn't that, there's so many teams assembled on TV to do carry out various plots of some sort or another.
Absolutely.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm really loath to point fingers at video games or music and that kind of thing, because I kind of like those things. But and I feel that they do a very good job of policing themselves. But just watching a children's show or candy commercials, you know, they'll have this kind, this level of disrespect and this level of disregard for consequences all over the place. And, you know, frankly, as a parent, I'm not really sure, you know, do I need to show them pictures of, you know, real life consequences?
Yeah, I don't know whether that would work, but is it right, Ted Feinberg, to say at least, you know, in part, the media exposure is got to be questioned here?
I think there's more than adequate data to support the correlation between what kids see in the media and media broadly represented and attitudes or behaviors that they embrace. The other piece that I think is important to mention is the issue of imitative behavior. One of the very, very serious concerns we have about incidences such as school shootings or suicides is that, you know, we know that there are other youngsters out there who are troubled, who have issues, who have conflicts, who need mental health support or the guidance and assistance from a caring adult, because they look at these terrible, horrific incidents, and they, for some, there's a need or a desire to want to either repeat those activities or to outdo them. And it seems to me that this particular situation that we're talking about may very well have been a gesture on the part of these children to imitate something that they either heard about or saw, and maybe we were lucky because at this very tender age, they may have lacked the formal sophistication to make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
But the issue of imitative behavior is one that I think we all have to be concerned about.
Felice, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
And we're talking about a case out of Waycross, Georgia, a plot to attack a third grade teacher by her students. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And a caller, Shava. Shava with us from Somerville in Massachusetts.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm an adult with attention deficit disorder. I'm in my late 40s, which is an unusual age to be diagnosed with this, but, you know, I'm a respected professional. And I have to say that if I had to be in special ed classes as a kid, it would have made me crazy because I'm also talented and gifted. And this sounds like a plot by a bunch of kids who really, like, were organized and had a lot going on, even if it was sociopathic. But has anybody considered the fact that, you know, it would take a lot of motivation for kids to come up with this? They must have, like, you know, was this teacher torturing them?
Well, we obviously
don't. There are a lot of things. You're jumping to judgment on what the kids might have thought about, but you're not jumping to judgment at all about what the teacher might have been doing.
What we do know is that one of the students was scolded, as it was described in the accounts, for standing on a chair. Scolded. But nevertheless, Ted Feinberg, that raises Shava's question. Could this not have been a teacher who's provoked this?
Well, I think, you know, there are codes of conduct that many schools have for their children. Some of them are well articulated, some are not. But I would hope that the caller would acknowledge that at the very least, if the facts are reasonably correct and the child was scolded for standing on a chair, the response or the planned response was clearly a shocking overreaction to whatever it was that the teacher did. But it also speaks to the need of teaching our children how to moderate their responses to things that they don't like, and that taking on this type of hurtful plan is way over the top for any age child, and especially for third graders.
Hmm. But have you considered that the teacher might have had an abusive pattern with the children?
Well, obviously we have no information about that.
Right.
But
you have no information about much of it, but that hasn't come up.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thanks very much for the call. And Ted Feinberg, thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure.
Ted Feinberg, Assistant Executive Director of the National Association of School Psychologists, with us from our bureau in New York. Tomorrow at this time, a profile of embattled Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe and a special program note. Next Tuesday, Talk of the Nation will broadcast from the brand new museum here in Washington, D.C. If you're going to be in the neighborhood and you'd like to attend the broadcast, send us an email, talk@npr.org. Please put tickets in the subject line. We hope to see you there. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.